You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, I'm Jody the Mom.
And I'm Dr. Bar the Doc, and welcome to Mom and Doc Talk. We are thrilled to have Andrea Jones joining us again, though this time instead of in the previous episode where she shared her family's experience with PANS. I believe it's episode 52. I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you haven't checked it out. It's really a great episode to listen to because it's our first one where we have an interview with a mom that is just sharing the perspective of a mom and just talking about that experience without kiddo present, which gives us a little bit more freedom to talk about some of the harder things from on the mom side, which is why we, of course, had to have you back because you've got some professional experience in helping moms with the hard stuff about being a mom and being a woman. So let me, before we dive in and start talking to you about all the questions that we've got for you, let me just read your bio so we can reintroduce you to our community. So Andrea Jones is a registered nurse and functional hormone practitioner with 20 years of clinical experience. She spent her formative years of training in conventional medicine, specializing in pediatric acute and intensive care before moving on to functional medicine. She is the host of the Abundant Wellness with Andrea podcast, author of the book Wrapped in Kindness, Our Journey Through PANS Pandas, and most importantly, mom to two wonderful girls, one of whom has pandas. So Andrea, welcome. We are so excited to talk to you about abundant wellness and about all of the things that you have experienced in because, I mean, gosh, the reality is that it's so hard. And like so many of the things about raising kids, some of the hardest things happen when we're also going through our own personal hardest things, right? So like yes. Our kids' hard times overlap with our hard times. Yes. And ignoring our hard stuff doesn't help our kids, even though we think it will. So I'm really grateful for what you shared with us previously and what you're here to talk with us about today so that we can hopefully pay attention to ourselves a little bit more.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, it's always an honor to be here. I love chatting with you ladies. And the more we can do, you know, I think to help, it's one thing to talk about hormones in a normal setting, meaning when you're not in acute distress, when your house isn't metaphorically burning down with pandas, mm-hmm. right? It is a whole different can of worms when we're dealing with that kind of chronic stress. So I'm excited to talk about that because unfortunately, have had to navigate a lot of that myself, but it, you know, truthfully has made me a better practitioner, I think, in a lot of ways to have to deal with that complexity. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So mamas, this one is mostly for you. So listen up and take some notes. So Andrea, let's just go ahead and dive in. Tell us a little bit more detail about what you do professionally.
Yeah. So I am a functional hormone coach, which basically is just a fancy name for a certification that doesn't actually exist, meaning that I wanted to help women with balancing their hormones because I had a terrible postpartum experience with my first daughter, lots of hormone imbalances, and didn't get any relief with conventional medicine. Birth control like wrecked my liver. It was just a poop show, for lack of a better word. And that really opened my eyes to this whole other world of medicine that I had not been trained in. And I just never went back. It's like, you know, it's like drinking a glass of water when you're, you know, you're extremely thirsty and realizing like, I gotta have water all the time now. Like I just had this thirst for figuring out what else I'd been missing in my health journey, I think. And so when I started to realize that like, gosh, this really is a passion of mine. And I am now having friends come to me and like, how did you get out of this mess? I basically had to piece together what I needed to know in order to help people. Meaning I still went out there and got all the certifications and training, you know, lab testing, understanding advanced hormones, understanding nutrition, like dietary supplementation, what is the role of all of this in supporting our hormones? Because there was a huge gap. And I think the thing about nurses that makes us really fun is that we're innovators kind of by our nature. We are, you put us in the thing that's missing and we will fill the gap. We'll figure out why it's not working. We'll fix it. And that's essentially what I did. So But there is no like actual designation. That's what I'm trying to clarify, like a designation of, whatever you want to call me. But all of the training is there, and we're still under state licensure, and we're still responsible, for meeting all of our requirements so that we can practice safely and ethically and all of that good stuff. But that's what I do. So I work with women. I do, full assessment, meaning I'm looking over their labs, I'm looking over their lifestyle. That's a big one. A lot of practitioners will look at their labs and be like, your estrogen looks good, your progesterone looks good. And they're looking at you like, I am miserable 3 weeks out of the month. How is this normal? And you're like, normal on labs doesn't actually mean functional. So hence the functional medicine aspect of things. Really helping women to understand how to care for their bodies in a way that supports normal, optimal hormone function so that you're not miserable.
Andrea, I have to say, kind of reiterate what Dr. Barr said in the beginning. I love that you're here with us. There's just something about being able to connect and chat with another pan's mom. There's like I know that all moms will that are watching this will appreciate because it's just it's really lovely to just be able to sit down and connect. And then also we're going to sneak in the back and attack them with some self-care. And I think that's would be the we're going to tell them stuff that they don't know that they need to hear, or we're going to talk about those things. And I think that's the perfect place to start is self-care and how as moms we can do something to help ourselves. As a pans mom, I had the complete inability to recognize that I needed help. I could not tell how not okay I was. How do as caregivers, do we even recognize that we need help whenever we're buried in our child's constant everyday needs? What would be a good first step? Where could we go to?
Yeah, I think first of all, just acknowledging that this is really, really hard. It is hard to recognize that you need help. But I think kind of tied in within that is like it's more an obstacle of I kind of know it's there because in the back of my mind I realize that this ship is sinking. Like I'm not really okay. But if I acknowledge that and I'm tapped out of resources, whether that's emotional resources, because I'm spending all of my time advocating for my child, managing IEPs, managing therapies, managing like all right. There's a gap in between. I almost feel like I can't acknowledge it because then that takes so much energy to now do something with it. For me, there was definitely like a lag there. And I think probably some fear too of acknowledging, well, if I acknowledge this, where is this going to go? Who is there to help me? And realize that there are some very significant barriers to with caregivers in terms of the support, the sheer amount of support that we actually need to be okay, and realizing that we don't have that, or maybe we don't have that. Like we didn't have families, we didn't have a whole lot of family support at the time, especially during like the worst parts of her illness. We really had no family support at all. So it really was dependent on like our income and what we could afford. And of course, all of that was going to PANS and PANDAS treatments at the time. So I think the first thing for me is developing that awareness of I'm not okay. And it's okay to say that I'm not okay, even though I don't know what to do about it yet. And part of that awareness, I think, for me looked like hypervigilance, realizing that my mind 90% of the time was worrying about my child, worrying about how she's going to get through the day. When is the next rage going to happen? Are we going to make it through this party? Like it was constant, nonstop. I was no longer thinking like Andrea before PANDAS. I was thinking like a mom who was really, really scared all the time. And so I think what I'm trying to articulate is that really developing that awareness that you don't feel like yourself. And even the thought of if self-care is too much for you, like if I say you got to do some self-care and automatically you're like, no, I don't have time for that. That's the biggest indicator that you need so much more than you think you do. And for me, that was kind of the I want to say it was probably 2 years in, which is way too long. just for everybody listening, before I realized, like, not really okay. I'm not really doing okay. I'm not really, like, mentally okay in this process anymore. And I need to start getting creative in how I'm going to access support for myself.
Yeah, I think another piece of it too is like, and I don't know if I'm unique in this, probably not, is I felt guilt about even thinking about getting help for myself. Like if like, why would I focus on myself as opposed to focusing every ounce of everything I had on Avery? And if I'm going and having my own appointments and my own counseling and all of that, that's going to take away from what I'm able to give to her. And that was like the worst way of thinking about it, but it's how I felt at the time.
Yeah. And I think that's very common. And it does feel that way. I think in part because our resources aren't infinite for most of us, right? So there's this feeling of finiteness. If I take away from this, then I'm taking away from this too. When really it was, I'm not able to be present with my child and manage the amount of rage that we're experiencing at home because I am so triggered that I'm like, I'm just barely, you know, I'm not eating, I'm not sleeping, I'm not all of these things, right? And so I did finally get to a point where it was like, I will not be able to get her to said finish line if I'm not okay, which means then I need to start allocating some resources to myself. And then what does that look like to do that? But the guilt for sure. And I think, honestly, I think sometimes when the limbic system gets activated, we're not thinking with this brain. We're thinking with all of the old messages that are stuck in our amygdala getting activated at the time. So you really aren't yourself. And it's hard to get out of that place. I would agree with that.
So I, as you're talking, I'm thinking through a couple of books that I've read recently. I am a big reader. I read like 93 books or something like that last year. Like I read a lot, Whoa. Right? And I'm thinking about two different books that I've read in the last couple of years. One is called Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagoski. I don't know if you've read that, but it is a fantastic Whoa. Book. And then Rest is Resistance. Oh, who wrote Rest is Resistance? The woman who founded the NAP ministry. I don't know if you know. I will look up. I feel so guilty that I can't remember her name because she's amazing. But I will put links to both of those books in our show notes for anybody who wants to check them out. But one of the things, the reason that Rest is Resistance comes to mind, it might seem like for anybody who's read it, it might seem like an unusual thing to be talking about in the context of like taking care of your family, because Rest is Resistance is really about like resting being an avenue for social and racial justice, and like to work against some of the really oppressive things of that can come with capitalism, right? And I'm not trying to turn this into like a political podcast or anything like that. But the reality is that like, even the way you were talking about family, like there's so many of us that run our families. It's like a business. Like we're, you know, who's the CEO of the family? It's mom, right? Who's got it? Like we have yep. to allocate resources. Who's doing the budgeting? Who's like, who's the CFO and the CEO, yep. or, you know, and all that sort of thing. And like, we can even get into the mindset where we're talking about ourselves as if we're you know in the middle of like our own small capitalist society, and that productivity is the only thing that is of value, and right. it's not, right? And there's a whole lot of value to rest, and like resting as itself being in something innate and valuable. And then with burnout, the concept that comes to mind is this idea of connected knowing, and that like, that, you know, well, the game is rigged and there's like, it's working against you, and that like connecting yeah. with others who are similar and like connected knowing. I just think that they're both really probably very valuable to read. I would say that for anybody who tends to be an audio listener, which probably a lot of people listening to a podcast are, I don't think burnout is a good listen in my experience. Okay. I tried to listen to it. It is not a good listen. It was a much better read in like a paper book. I don't even think I liked the Kindle version. I think paper was better, but
okay. Yeah.
So all of this to say, like really what I'm hearing it come down to is just like the burnout, right? Like, and the need for rest, you know, if we're talking about like the family as like a corporation, that it's even more when you've got a kiddo with PANS, right? So you don't just have like regular family and schoolwork and taking care of the house and, you know, making sure things are clean and like regular doctor's appointments. You got lots of doctor's appointments, and then the doctors are probably not figuring things out. So you're trying to go basically getting your own right. degree, by doing all the research in the middle of the night. You're not sleeping. You're going outside of your area of expertise, trying to be the one to put it together and figure things out. Tons of different therapies and, you know, lots of different specialists, all sorts of school meetings to figure out if you are lucky enough that you can still go to school.
Right.
So, I mean, just like, you know, running a family without all of that can lead to burnout. And I just see so much caregiver burnout. And then we get to that place where we're like, it increases reactivity and it makes everything. It's like, we're just so on edge. So what do you recommend that people do to avoid it?
Oh gosh. There's a list. I'll go through. I'm like, where do I start? The short list or the long list? I think the very first thing to do is to give yourself more than you think you need. And also recognizing that whatever you can give yourself, even if it's, you know, like I think my only self-care for a short period of time was buying myself a decaf coffee like once a week. And it was warm, it was comforting, it was something not nourishing, but, you know, like in my brain, it was warm, it was nourishing, right? And that was something kind that I could do for myself during a really, really, really challenging time. I would say don't put off getting counseling. We found some great counselors that were like sliding scale. They offered a sliding scale fee. There are a lot of nonprofits that actually offer counseling for free that you can find, just to have a place to go to start to unburden yourself, but also be challenged in your thought processes. Like Jody was saying, I felt guilty. I felt like I was taking away from something that was really absolutely necessary. So for me, it was really helpful to have someone challenging my process, you know, my thought process of, why aren't you asking your husband for more help? Why aren't you reaching out to friends? Why aren't you doing XYZ? And I then had to kind of dig into like, why do I have resistance around this? And it was hard, but I'm like, $25 twice a month, I have to do it. It's just a non-negotiable. Recognizing that there truly are times where the finances just are not there for something like that. For me, what I would do is I always prioritized an early bedtime and like earlier than you think you need. So like 8:30 or 9 o'clock, which often means, if your PANS or PANDAS child is not sleeping, you have to come up with a plan with your partner if you have one. So my husband and I, especially when our panda was, she went through a period where she couldn't sleep by herself. So it was either one of us in her room or she was in our room for, I think it was a year, somewhere during that, where we took turns and we just got to be really good communicators about, you know, we both need sleep. We both have full-time jobs. Mine's at home, his is at work. And, this is a priority, getting some noise canceling headphones, because there were a lot of times where bedtime was rage time. And so, if I needed to go take a bath, I would put on the noise canceling headphones and do some like binaural beats to where I'm getting some almost like EMDR kind of going on in my brain. There are things that we can do that don't require extra finances. Even it's like an Epsom salt bath, throw some magnesium in there and get some, you know, nervous system support going. Journaling is free. To be honest, I really didn't like journaling for a period of time because it was very negative. Nothing was good. Like everything's going to hell in a handbasket. So I didn't enjoy it, but I did kind of do it because it was my only outlet for getting what was on the inside outside, if that makes sense. Going for a walk. I think people, we think, gosh, that's so much work, right? How can I create 10 minutes in my day? But I noticed that the 10 minutes of me walking around the block is enough to re-regulate me to where I can come back inside and deal with the situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting myself some of that self-care. I'm looking, you know, I'm doing some, I forget, I think it's like, I think it's called eye reorienting that, does like, it stimulates the vagus nerve to kind of pop you out of fight or flight. So there are things that we can do even with extremely, extremely limited resources that will help to carry us through. And it doesn't feel like enough. I'm just going to be honest with you. It will not most likely feel like enough, because the reality is that the burden is extraordinary. But I can say now, looking back, now that we're not in that crazy intense of a season, it was enough to get me to where I needed to be. It was enough to keep me afloat when I needed to be afloat, and keep me from like falling into the pit of despair most times. So the pit of despair was still there. I still visited it regularly, but it wasn't my everyday experience.
So you've shared with us some really like helpful, accessible tools that are very high-minded. I'm gonna go a little lowbrow here, and I'm gonna say sometimes you're just so overwhelmed and like on the brink of burnout to fully in burnout that, as you had mentioned earlier, even the thought of doing something is too much. And I think that there is value in giving yourself grace and saying the reason this feels like even doing this thing to take care of myself is too much is because it's legitimately too much right now. And
100%.
I need to sit down and watch Bravo. And I'm gonna watch Bravo
Yes.
for an hour.
Yes.
And I'm not gonna
Right.
get stuck in watching Bravo all day, every day, but I'm gonna watch some like completely brainless, mindless things
100%.
because that's actually giving me just a break to shut off and detach for a minute.
Yes.
Permanent long-term detachment and dissociation and whatever, not
Not a
helpful, but
good,
like
right.
occasional and like recognizing like I just don't have the energy, so I'm just
Yes.
gonna do nothing and let it go. It will come to me when I'm ready. I will get there.
Absolutely. And that is, that there is place for all of it. And I remember, it's funny that you said that, because I remember picking shows where I had to solve a problem, where I could actually see the resolution by the end of the episode, because pandas felt like a problem I could not solve. And as a nurse, that's really hard. Like, we're used to seeing kids come in and out, and we work together as a team. We fix them up, we send them out on a good day, right? My brain loves puzzles like that. And so I would find shows where, like, Call the Midwife, for example, where it's like, the baby's born, yay, everyone's happy. They, go on their way. And it would bring me like a sense of closure, or like I wrapped up the problem, right? So for me, that worked really well. There were other times where I couldn't handle intensity like that. And so then it was just something like, I think it was Drop Dead Diva was like my show for a while, which I don't even remember. It was like a comedy, but now I'm like, that was such a dumb show. But it really did like just provide me some comedic light, something to take my mind off of difficulties. So absolutely, it doesn't. And honestly, I don't think it's beneficial for everything that we do to be hard. Like if counseling feels hard, or a walk feels hard, and making home cooked meals feels hard, and going to work so you can pay for your therapy feels hard, you have to have a break in there. There has to be something that is light and easy in there. And so if that's like for me, grabbing myself a coffee, okay, well, that's what I'm gonna do.
Well, Andrea, I saw you take notes when I was saying the names of the books. I can't wait to hear if you read about them and hear what
I
you
will.
let me
I
know.
will. I definitely will. I was taking notes for sure.
But I think that like the point that you made about recognizing how you're reacting to the break is really important because if it's a break because it's separate but it adds stress to you, then it's probably not a good break, or and finding something that can like fulfill a need that isn't being met, even if it's through like a vicarious need being met. So it's part of what, like sometimes if I'm missing friends from the East Coast, I'll watch Real Housewives of New York City because I have memories of the places that they went and I want to
That's so
go like,
funny.
and I pretend I'm hanging out with my friends and just watching
Yeah.
drama unfold around me. Right. And so it's like, so it like figuring out what it is that you need and like finding something that fills that need, even if it's a vicarious need, can be temporarily helpful until you can access the thing that takes more effort to fill the need in a healthier, more vibrant way.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think recognizing that spectrum of what you're able to do is like a rubber band. It's going to move back and forth a lot. So meaning like 1 month you might be able to be like, I am fully present and able to tackle this with EMDR. I can do the hard work. I can go there. And there will be other times where that is not the self-care you need. Like for my husband, even I'd be like, go skateboarding, go take your longboard, go on the waterfront and just like take your mind off of what's going on. Like today is not a therapy day. Today is a, you need some wind in your sails kind of day, and realizing that that's going to ebb and flow. And it's not, there is no judgment either way, you know, on whether or not that's good enough or enough even.
Yeah. I feel like we've kind of touched around the answer of this next question, but I still want to ask it anyways, because I feel like a whole lot of moms and likely dads too are thinking right now, yeah, right. Do you know what it's like in my house right now? It's crazy. So there's like a connection here. So how do caregivers meet their basic physical needs when their child is literally losing their mind?
This is a, it's a really good question. It's a really hard question to answer. And I think that, that we can all agree. Yes. I, even when you said that, I kind of had like this flash of body memories come over me of like, oh yeah. Cause I remember having to go pee some days and Alexis following me to the bathroom and screaming and raging at me and pounding on the door because she couldn't handle being left by herself, yeah, even for me to pee. And so, yes, it is valid and it is real. And I think for me, I had to create really simple routines that gave me a little window, even if it was only 5 minutes of time that I could do the thing that I needed to do. So for me, because sleep wasn't a huge, like we could get her to sleep, we could leave the room eventually, you know, sleep in my bed, wake up before her. I would wake up 10 minutes before I had to start getting her ready for school, and I would make my breakfast. And I would try to make something that was somewhat nourishing, meaning like a smoothie that had greens in it and some protein and some fat. I kept it very, very simple. If yours is like the best I can do is waffles, do that. I'm not saying the smoothie is the standard. I am saying that that 5 minutes became my window of I have to do something for myself. If that means that I took that 5 minutes and I got dressed and I drank some coffee and it was 5 minutes without screaming, then that is my window. For me, she was able to go to school, at least for the first 2 years. For me, her time at school was, you know, some time that I could catch up on some things like laundry, dishes, whatever. But again, I didn't always prioritize that because sometimes I just needed a break and I would watch a show and fold laundry or something. It is very hard, but I think we have to find the margins that we can, even when it feels like there is no margin. And so for me, that meant creating the margin. I love my friends that have known me forever know that I love a granny bedtime. I love my granny bedtime. I am not giving it up. If you don't hear a reply from me after 8:30, it's because I'm sleeping. But that's because I've created that margin for me. I know that for me, sleep plays a huge role in my mood, anxiety. If I'm, you know, having intrusive thoughts or whatever, about stuff, if I'm not sleeping, it's PTSD flare up time and it's not fun. It is not a fun mental space to live in. So for me, that was my, the window of time that I created. Now, could I use that time to clean the bathrooms and do the laundry and the dishes? Yeah, but I won't be doing that because that's not where my mental health need is currently. Now, my husband does things differently. He, going to sleep is like the most depressing thing you could ever ask him to do. Like, and he's always been this way. Like, don't force me to go to bed early. I feel so depressed because I'm missing out on time for doing fun. So for him, his window is, you know, 30 minutes after the girls go to bed, he's reading, he's creating art for his business, he's doing something that is life-giving to him. And so I think that's one way to answer the question. The mm-hmm. second way to answer the question is that when you absolutely can't, because the fire is too big, meaning that it's all encompassing all around you all the time, not to mention you have other children, most likely. You know, there's usually other siblings involved here too, where I had to start asking for help. Meaning asking friends, you know, hey, could you come and, you know, either hang out with my youngest so I can do the dishes or come and help me like clean up my house, like basic self-care stuff. There were definitely times where that was also a part of the equation, and it was very humbling to do that. It was very, very hard for me to get over myself and do that, but it was the only way. I mean, it's like having a newborn all over again when you have a child with PANDAS, and I think people don't like a really colicky newborn, well, just a very colicky newborn, the amount of demand that is on you time-wise. So my friend was like, you have to treat this like you have a newborn. What do you do when you have a newborn? You have friends bring you meals. You have them come over and help you with laundry. You can't do the self-care yourself. And so that's kind of how I would answer that question. There's room for both.
Yeah, I
And
love
I would
that you talk.
recognize that there's a lot of people who don't feel like they have the support. Like either they live in a place where they don't have friends or family, or because of the nature of how PANS and PANDAS like presents, sometimes people lose connections with friends and family. And so one of the things I think was brilliant that you pointed out was recognizing the differences, you know, like with you and your husband, like what's giving and what feels like it's taking from you. And so basically like taking a step back and like maybe in the commercial breaks from whatever indulgent TV show you're watching when you just feel like you can't do it is like thinking through what does my natural rhythm and my flow look like during the day so that I can create the most ease in it. So for instance, like at the time that we're recording this, we just had record devastating floods in California. My husband does a lot of volunteer work to help with disaster relief. So he was gone for a while doing that. He came home, was wake up in the morning before everybody got up and got home, like basically in time for bed. And so even like, granted, I do not have a PANS child, but like I'd work all day, every day with PANS kids, you know, so I don't have to have one at home necessarily to like have the stress of having it.
Definitely.
Finding the space, like recognizing I am not going to cook a healthy meal at the end of the day. So I have to figure out crockpot meals so that I can do it at the beginning of the day. Because if I need to do something productive, it has to happen first thing in the morning because I am a morning person. I am not an evening person. So like once I get my kid to bed, don't
It's
ask me to
over.
do anything. And yeah, barely all I can really do is get her to bed. You know, like I can get through that. So finding the path of least resistance can help. And so much of what else you've been, Jody, you're dying to say something here, but I
No,
want to just add one
I
more
just
thing.
like I have to point out that whenever you were giving your response, Andrea, it kind of got me that you said our basic needs. You said food, you said sleep, and you said one other thing. I can't remember. It was three of them. But I think, and I recently had an opportunity to chat with you on your podcast, and we were talking about, like, I feel like I'm such a cautionary tale of what not to do.
Right.
And those little moments, like, I chose to go outside and hang out with my plants because that's where I felt most okay. I wasn't choosing to do the basics, like feeding myself and drinking water and sleeping. I wasn't doing all of those things, and I drove myself into the ground. I made myself sicker and sicker and sicker. So I think that that's so important to recognize that self-care can literally be walking into the kitchen and making yourself food or getting yourself a glass of water, like those basic things, making sure that you're taking care of your body and allowing yourself to close the computer or the labs that you're looking at and allowing yourself to sleep. That way you're not making yourself sicker in the process. I think that's so important.
Absolutely. And I think I kind of come back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I don't have a picture of it, so I'm just going to make a fancy little triangle here and hope everybody gets it. But we have those basic needs, right? Which is food, water, shelter, and safety. And we can't advance to any, like the thing that Maslow said, highlighted over and over and over again is you cannot advance to the next stage of development unless all of those needs are like 90%, I forget what the actual percentage is met. And so we are expecting ourselves as moms to be able to be functioning at the top of this pyramid, which is self-actualization, right? Which is where we're able to have empathy and be able to move through this massive chronic thing without having anything below it. And it just showed me when I started to look at that there was a really big disconnect for me between what I was expecting of myself and where I actually was able to function. And so I started to just really focus on, I'm going to get a big water bottle and make sure that I'm drinking water throughout the day, that I'm actually peeing. And I would kind of, because she would follow me to the bathroom and scream and rage at me, I would hum in, like, to actually not drown out the noise, but get me focused on something else. Cause it's pretty awful to hear, you know, when you've seen the kid rage like that, it's awful and you can't get away from it. And so I would find little tricks like that to kind of get me through the moment, but it's still like, peeing is a basic need and you got to go to the bathroom. So it is finding that and realizing that you're worth enough to find room to do some of those things. And even when it's hard.
Yeah. You know, I love that you brought up the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I'm going to take a little bit of an aside just for something that I've been toying around with in my mind. And I'd be curious to hear what you guys think about this too. I've been curious of whether there is also a hierarchy of intuition, and that, like, in order to be able to really truly listen to yourself and to know when what you are experiencing is a true intuition, or true knowing versus a reactivity to, like, a fear or something, that you have to be able to listen to all of the same things on, like, the hierarchy of needs, that you would have the same hierarchy of intuition. So if you're not able to connect to your own intuition about, I need to sleep, I need to eat, I need to drink, if you're ignoring that, how can you possibly expect that your intuition about other things is actually correct? Because you don't have your basic needs met, like the foundations of health. And so
absolutely. I
love how, like, so much of what we're talking about, you know, we haven't even got, like, we're gonna end up not talking about hormones all that much, even though, like, you're an expert in hormones, because the reality is that, like, if we try to get to this, like, big, like, this, like, higher level type of thing, but we haven't met our basic needs, it's not useful. And so we need to talk about making sure those things are met first.
Absolutely.
Because it might make it so that it's not even needed, right? So, like, you know, in naturopathic medicine and in homeopathy, like, in homeopathy in particular, we have two things we need to do. We need to remove obstacles to health, and we need to stimulate the body to heal. And so what we're talking about right now is, like, removing obstacles to health and, like, establishing the foundations for on which you can have the opportunity to be healthy. And sometimes that's all we have to do. Not, you know, in pans and pandas, we absolutely need to stimulate the body to heal. And when we're dealing with hormones, we probably need a little bit more than establishing the foundations for health and, like, removing obstacles. But if we don't do that, nothing else is going to work as well. Right. So, like, that has to be taken care of. And so I would love to, like, I mean, we've been talking around all the obstacles. So, like, let's just actually talk about, like, what are some of the biggest obstacles that the two of you both, I'd love to hear from both of you, that you experience to being able to do that. So both obstacles to your health and obstacles to, like, just life and taking care of the basic needs that you need to have met.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest obstacles were, it felt like I didn't have enough time. I remember thinking that a lot. Like, I feel like I don't have enough time. And really that's because I was overthinking what I needed to be doing that would actually impact me. Like Jody was saying, just get a glass of water, right? Like, sometimes it really is that simple. For me, it was also this feeling of there's not enough, like, there's not enough emotional energy to take care of myself. I did feel like that a fair amount, to where it was like, I'm just so tired of taking care of things that I just hand me some bonbons and let's hope for the best, you know? Like, really. And, that was a big obstacle for me until I think there was a point where I started to realize that if I didn't do those basic things, there would be a point where I would really start to feel that. And it, like, there was a little bit of self-awareness to know, that if I didn't start taking small action, I really wouldn't be okay. And I think that was hitting right around the point where I started to realize, I think it was the 2-year mark where I was like, oh, we're not healed yet. For some reason, I thought there was like a magic two-year magical button, you know, of like, hand is reset, you know, we get to go back to normal life. And once I started to realize that wasn't our trajectory, I began to shift gears into more marathon thinking than sprint thinking. And that was, you know, overcoming that obstacle took a while. And then I think the third thing for me was the hypervigilance that I was experiencing, the hyper anxiety that I was experiencing, to where I wasn't able to access the higher level thinking, problem solving, because I just had this background anxiety going on all the time. For me, those were probably the three biggest obstacles to actually doing the things, if that makes sense.
I like that you call it hypervigilance. I was going to call it something different. I think that I was the biggest obstacle to getting help, like maybe my mindset. At the time when I was going through it, I thought it was because I didn't have support. Like, I didn't have family members who understood, so they wouldn't get it. Like if my husband, if I were to ask him to do something, would he do it like I did it? And looking back now at the whole journey, I feel like, number one, I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know what I needed, but more than anything, I wanted to be able to control everything. I wanted to be able to do it the way that I wanted it done. And, I didn't ask for help because of that. Had I asked family, they would have come in, even not understanding what was going on. And I, you know, my mom was super helpful. But I needed help more than that. But at the same time, I felt like I was the only one that could do this thing right. So my, you know, if I did it all over again, I would be like, nope, you come help. I need somebody to help me with my laundry. I need like somebody to come put the food in the crock pot in the morning. Like I would ask all the help. I just didn't know how. And I felt like nobody else could do it other than me. So that was sort of my obstacle.
I see. So what I'm hearing from you is that your obstacle was the illusion and delusion of control, like thinking that you had control over things that you didn't, wanting to have control over things that you didn't, and then suffering because of the reality that you have control over a very tiny fraction of the things that you want to have control over. That's my biggest obstacle in life, is when I try to control things. And that's when I get the most relief, is when I recognize, look, I can't control that. Focus on the things that I can do something about, and not on the things that I can't do anything about.
Yeah. So as moms, when we're in the middle of it, it's hard to see anything. Where do we start as far as getting ourselves help? Because I feel like if I would have had a specific map in order that says this is this, I would have thought about those things. But what advice do you have as far as how do we do this?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I had to think about this a little bit, because I think the answer that we hear so often is, you know, and I think I said this earlier, which was like to develop awareness. But I think sometimes even before we develop awareness, it's kind of shifting the culture around motherhood in general, which is most of us come into motherhood. Right? Just shift the culture. It's fine. No big deal. But really, it does come down to that, because most of us come into motherhood with the expectation that it is on us to figure this out. Like, we don't have a community mindset around motherhood like other cultures do. So I do think that's kind of at the crux of it. But then you turn up the heat 100 times hotter with pandas, right? And now it is really in your face that, like, you really can't do this thing on your own. So I think the first thing is going back to this idea that every single one of us has basic needs that have to be met. And I'm going to choose to be proactive in meeting those things, even if I don't have an awareness of what those things are. Like, we, I think, sometimes can overcomplicate it into, like, I've got to get everybody in the family in counseling. I've got to get, you know, everybody in trauma therapy, because let's be real, it's a dumpster fire here and I don't know how we're going to make it out. We're thinking of like really big, complex solutions, when really the solutions are a lot smaller. And I think the answer to that question, to keep it really simple, is to assume that you have basic needs and to start meeting them with as little effort as you can, even if it's only, 1 minute of going to the bathroom yourself, or, if your child is safe and they're raging, but they're safe, put on your headphones and do the laundry. Like, things like that. That's like, I know my child is safe, but if they're going to keep screaming, I'm not going to sit there and watch it. Like, I'm going to go be safe for myself. So I think before we can get to that higher level processing of being self-aware, right, of what the obstacles are, it just assume that you have these, the same basic needs that your child has for food, water, sleep, community, connection, and start taking baby steps in just one of those areas.
So let's shift gears a little bit to get to your area of expertise and your professional training with late. So let's get specific to moms too. So a lot of us, myself included, are at that age where our hormones are starting to change and shift, and like we're getting a whole new look at things, and it affects us in so many broad ways. So can you talk to us a little bit about, the importance of looking at our hormones, addressing them if we need it, and like how it can actually relate to being more available to our kids, and doing the work that they need, and how ultimately it is caring for our kids by caring for ourselves. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So, basics of hormones. Hormones are just chemical messengers in the body that signal, different responses within the body. So for example, progesterone is very calming to the brain. It's why a lot of women say, yeah, I felt really good when I was pregnant, and yay progesterone, right? It's why I feel really good during the first 2 weeks of my cycle, or like during ovulation, and then poof, for 2 weeks after that, I feel awful. It's understanding that those chemical messengers, hormones, are playing a vital role in how you feel on a day-to-day and even sometimes an hourly basis. For moms especially, but we'll just say moms with pandas, the stress level is significantly higher, which means that you're going to start depleting your progesterone pretty rapidly. Which I think is why you would have a better idea of this than I would. I would bet money that you probably are talking to moms that are seeing perimenopause symptoms a lot earlier than the average population because of the chronic stress. Like, we do have enough data on that to know that stress will put you into perimenopause early, because it's depleting the vital nutrients to actually shore up your hormones. And so for me, I mean, I've always taken really, really good care of my hormones because of my experience postpartum, but I noticed that when Alexis got pandas, it became a lot harder for me to manage, what I was doing to support my hormones. Or maybe a better way to say it is, it became a lot more important for me to continue those like micro habits that were keeping my periods regular, that were keeping me, healthy, that were keeping me from, raging back at her the one day before my cycle that I would experience rage, like those kind of things. Because when you're depleted of those nutrients, you can't handle the little things. Like, does that make sense? It's like everything tips you over when you're having those hormonal shifts. And so I think it becomes really important to recognize that your hormones are your fifth vital sign. They are telling you about the overall health of your entire body, how you're managing stress. Like, they are the indicators of how you're actually doing. So if you're like, I'm totally fine, I'm handling all of this, but 2 weeks out of the month, you feel awful, you're not sleeping well, you're having anxiety, you're having mood swings, you're having an increase in psychiatric symptoms, you're having any of those big shifts, that's an indicator that you're not actually as okay as you think you are. And that's hard, right? Because we want to just keep the ship moving. But we really can't do it. You can't be you without your hormones. And I think without supporting them, you're going to feel that impact pretty, pretty significantly.
Yeah. Are there any specific warning signs that mom should pay attention to that say that hormones could really need some attention? or some support?
Definitely. Yeah. So I would say difficulty sleeping around ovulation and around your period. So if you notice that 3 days before your cycle, you're not sleeping well and not able to go back to sleep, that's a common one that we see. Women waking up with racing thoughts and unable to go back to sleep is a big one. Because again, that sleep debt is, it will cost you something, right? So that's a big one. Painful periods, heavy but prolonged bleeding. So bleeding that lasts longer than 5 days typically is like a big clue for me that things are not super happy in the hormone department. Breast tenderness, menstrual migraines, significant fatigue before your cycle where you're just like dragging no matter how much sleep you get. PMS symptoms too. So like all the mood symptoms where you're just, you don't feel like yourself, you have, you know, profound negative thoughts, those kind of things would be all worth looking into, in my opinion.
Andrew, do you notice that there's any like non-cycle related symptoms? Now that I am getting into that place that I am recognizing that I, without a doubt, am like in the peri place. I'm seeing that like, oh, maybe my anxiety that was unexplained for, well, or that I found lots of excuses for, but I had never experienced in my life before, that just showed up. Like that's probably related. And oh, also all of my joints that suddenly hurt. That's probably related. Like the change in my digestion is also probably related. So are there other signs? I mean, am I crazy or is that like all related?
No, it is. And most of those symptoms, aside from the joint pain, get treated with psychiatric medication. So like an SSRI. Yeah. So if you go to your doctor and you're like, I'm really anxious all the time, I'm not sleeping very well, I don't know why I can't remember things to save my life. That's something that I hear a lot. Brain fog, memory changes. Because your hormones, specifically estrogen, is a really key player in how much energy you have and your focus. So a lot of women are actually getting, I think, personally, getting misdiagnosed with ADD in their 40s when it is not ADD. It's 100% hormones. If we were to flip the lens and kind of look at it differently. So if even if you're cycling, but you're noticing that your sleep patterns are changing, you're not waking up rested, you're having like a big afternoon slump that you're like, that didn't used to be there. Joint pain for sure, brain fog, unexplained anxiety and depression. Those would be, you know, when I say unexplained, like there is an explanation, but unexplained in terms of it doesn't make sense with life situations. Then that would be another, a big one for sure. That's not necessarily related to your flow or having a monthly cycle, but they're present.
So what about skin? Are there any skin changes that people would need to look for that could be suggestive of hormone issues?
Yes. So acne breakouts is a big one that can let us know about DHEA. Really oily hair is another one that can let us know. It actually can tell us how your adrenal glands are doing and how it's converting hormones for you. That's one of our big tells. Drying skin, vaginal dryness, vaginal itching, or if you're having like, basically like yeast infections, that's another indicator that your hormones are shifting. A lot of people think like, oh, I have, you know, an overactive like bacteria down there, and it's generally not, it's usually estrogen driven, skin changes. So, those would be some of the more common ones that we see.
And I don't want to turn this into like a, just a list of all the things, right? But I just want to add in a few more things that, and you can just say yes or no to them. Increasing issues with like liver and metabolism and like gallbladder, those had to come up a lot more during that 100%. Time. And I think, so that those are related because, you know, cholesterol is a, you know, it's a precursor for hormones and all that. So, issues with digestion, issues with like gallbladder pain, liver pain, even having liver enzymes be elevated can be related to that.
Yeah.
I believe even like rosacea can get worse. And I recently learned that if you've ever had issues with like eating and like eating disorders, that it can really flare in perimenopause. Yes. That's another thing that if you're starting to notice some more challenges, especially because of the weight changes that can come. So that's another thing to look at, right? Like if you have a different way that your body typically deals with eating food and weight, and it's changing, and then it can like really trigger something that might have seemed resolved because of the ways that your body's shifting too.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely difficulty losing weight, excessive weight gain, even where you're like, all I had was a salad. I don't understand, you know, water retention, all those are very, very common.
Andrea, I know things have to be individualized, but are there general things that we should be doing beyond like the basics of sleep and eating healthy food and drinking water to support our hormones?
Yeah, this is a good one. I think eating healthy food, I mean, I feel like I could do a whole lecture on that because there are very specific foods that we do focus on for hormone health. But I would say just to kind of touch on that, increasing fiber is huge. So as much fibrous vegetables as you can get, generally I say somewhere between 5 to 8 cups per day, which that is hard, even for me, like it is hard. It is a challenge, but I'm committed to it. So, that if you were to focus on just three things, it would be hydration, sleep, and getting enough like fibrous foods in your day to keep your digestion moving, because that will clear out probably the biggest obstacle for all of the other hormones, which is estrogen. So if we can get our estrogen in a much happier place, it's going to keep our progesterone healthy. It's going to keep our liver functioning the way that it should, helps with, you know, cortisol balancing, keeps progesterone in check. So those would be the three biggest things that I would focus on. Gentle movement, you could add into that, but not to make it too complicated.
No, I think that's super helpful. And just to make that like a simplified thing for Pan's parents who are dealing with it with like all the stuff, right? If you could have like a smoothie making, like a prep thing, or you can even just buy like pre-prepared smoothie packages and stuff at the grocery store. So you can have a smoothie for your breakfast. I always say protein, fat, fiber is like what I remind myself every time I eat: protein, fat, and fiber. So having smoothies regularly that you can just like quickly mix up and go, chopped up a bunch of stuff that's like ready to just go in the crock pot, and like making like big stews and soups that you can like freeze and then just thaw when you need to, that have a lot of that too. And like if with soups, you get the nutrients, they do get changed a little bit from cooking, but like they're at least retained in liquid instead of like getting cooked off and all that. So those are some of the things that you can do to like give yourself the ability to do a harder thing a little bit easier. All right. Last question for you today, it's kind of a biggie, but I know that you recently released a program for teens with PMS and managing their periods. And as I'm sure we've talked about it previously on this podcast, but as a lot of parents know, if you haven't gotten to puberty yet, puberty can be a really challenging time for Pan's kids, because it changes presentation and it changes their response pattern to all of their treatments, homeopathy included. So I was just curious if you have any insights that you would like to share about guiding kids through the onset of puberty, especially when they're dealing with PANS as well.
Yeah. So I'm just going to preface this and say I am brand new to this territory as a parent. As a nurse educator, I have a lot of experience, but it does flip the script a little bit for me being now like very close to the situation. So one thing that I do think worked in our favor is that we started talking to her about the changes in her body fairly young. So like 8 to 10 years old, if you can expect with your body, there's some really good books. Gosh, I forget what the name of it is, but when I find it, I'll email it to you so you can put it in the show notes, because it's very age appropriate, very like, just really good at explaining how, like what to expect for changes in your body. And then I think, you know, the second biggest thing is just really, empathizing and learning how to be present, to what she's experiencing in her body. Specifically, I'm just going to talk about girls specifically, because I don't have a ton of experience with boys' puberty changes, but, helping her to understand, helping her to gain confidence in the changes. When it comes to PANS and PANDAS, we did notice some really good changes, and then some like weird shifts in the presentation that I was like, that's weird. I don't really know what to make of that. But there were other positive things where she's developed a little bit more awareness of her body and awareness of how she feels in her body, which is like, I'm feeling anxiety. I think it's because of this. I think I need my remedy, which she's never said before. Like, she's never made the connection. Actually, I feel better when I have my remedy and I feel this way. So I was like, hey, that's a really good, positive, you know, shift in the right direction. When it comes to like some of the strategies that we talked about for women, like women in perimenopause, those same principles apply to your daughter in puberty. So making sure she's getting adequate sleep, making sure she's hydrated. So offering, you know, in our house, we don't really drink like juice or flavored beverages a whole lot. If you do, make sure that water is included in that, because water, you know, it's flushing out toxins, it's flushing out, it's keeping the liver and the gallbladder nice and healthy, which is really, really vital for women's hormones. Trying to provide nutritious snacks when we can. So again, they're teenagers, so there's the whole autonomy slash I'm going to do whatever I want slash you're not the boss of me slash I still love you a lot. So there's a whole lot of a lot of weird stuff happening. But I offer those foods and I say, these are our choices. You can do whatever you want with them. Like, I've provided the healthy choices, but you can do whatever you want with the choices that we have. And then she kind of makes her good choices from there. And, you know, really just spending a lot of time explaining, when you feel this in your body, when you're having cramps, this is what that means. And this is what we can do to feel better. Is that something you want to do? So it is offering, we're lengthening the leash, you know, little by little, in terms of, I realize I can't control everything that she's going to do now because she's 13 and she's developing some autonomy.
Especially with it being relatively new to you, we have to just meet the kiddos where they're at. Like, there's like, just basically, I think the most important thing is to remember that puberty is not going to look the same for a pans kid as it's going to look for other kids who don't have pans. And that puberty is likely to change the way you manage pans. And so mom and dad too, recognize that you might have to take a step back again and shift and reevaluate how you're navigating things, so that you can sort of, give yourself the ability to see new patterns, yes, to embrace new patterns and to figure out new places where you need to shift to decrease resistance for the things that need to happen in your daily life to take care of yourself and to take care of your kids.
Absolutely. And I will say, just my observation just in the last couple of cycles that she's had, has it's actually brought some clarity to like, oh, if she's having cramps with every cycle, I know now what I need to work on. Like, we need to start increasing some greens. We need to start support, you know, doing some gentle liver support stuff, usually through food. But then again, like you said, it's offering the good, positive, beneficial choices and knowing that she might only pick one. Or, you know, if it's a good pandas day, she might pick three. Like, there's a lot of variability within that. But it has changed the presentation. You know, in some ways it's just weird. It's just a weird new time for all of us. So riding that roller coaster with everybody else that's listening.
Well, you've given us some really great insight for, you know, the importance of mindset and some of the things of just how we relate to ourselves so that we can then start considering doing the things that can be more beneficial to help remove some of the resistance and the obstacles and just like the stuck points that we can get in that make it hard for us to do the things that we need to do to take care of ourselves, that in turn makes it easier to take care of the people that we care about the most in the world. So Andrea, where can people find you if they want to learn more about you or your programs or have questions?
Yeah, you can find me. Probably the best place to find me would be on Instagram, and it's just at Abundant Wellness with Andrea. If you feel like that's always a great place to message me on there, I'm always, you know, responding to messages there. But if you feel like you know Instagram is not your jam, you can just send me an email, Andrea at AbundantWellnessWithAndrea.com.
All right, we'll put links to both of those things as well as your website in the
you.
Show notes. And we'll put links to all of the books that we mentioned. And Andrea's going to find out the book that she was referencing and send that to me. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. Andrea, we're so grateful that you came back to share with us outside of your personal experience, but into your professional experience. Because as you said at the beginning, like the reality is we've just like our lives don't stop just because we've got kids that have a lot of extra needs, right?
Absolutely.
And so being able to take care of ourselves during that time is vital so that you can have any chance of relief and like even a moment of peace among the hardest days. And so if you're not paying attention to these basic needs and the things that we need to feel okay, it's going to be a lot harder to find. So thank you for what you shared with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always enjoy being on here.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Yes. Have a good one. Bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for pans and pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.